Ladies and gentlemen, I've grown frustrated with the lack of coverage the Bulls have received on the sports radio airwaves in our fair city of Chicago. My team has become an afterthought, rarely discussed, despite the fact that we're a rising red leviathan that will soon decimate Eastern Conference and eventually the West. I've therefore combed the internet to find the brightest stars in the Bulls podcasting world, bringing them together for a meeting of great minds, for enlightened discussion about this team I hold dear. We are luminaries and we have a name. I'm C. Red Fred, and these are the Knights of the Round Ball Table. I'm C. Red Fred, and here are today's Knights of the Round Ball Table. Number one, Keith Franz, at Bull Scripted. Number two, Marcus Couch, at Marcus Couch. You can also find him at bullspodcast.com. Number three, the great Wise, that's W-Y-S-E, at Radical underscore Creator. You can find him at bullspodcast.com. And number four, Brad Squires, a.k.a. Buzz. His Twitter handle, at SMBuzzweed. You can also find them at www.sportsmockery.com. I call the Knights of the Round Ball Table to order. Our first question goes to Knight Marcus Couch. Who have been the two best players for the beloved Bulls in the first three games of this preseason?
My favorite, or the ones at least that have impressed me thus far, Zach LaVine and Bobby Portis.
Wise?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the two guys who have shown up these last three preseason games, Bobby Portis and Zach LaVine.
Keith?
The two guys that are both averaging 18.3 points per game are probably the two standouts so far. I guess you could probably throw Blake D in there as a, you know, sidebar. He's been kind of impressive the first three games as well.
And Brad?
LaVine and Portis for sure, averaging up in the upper teens in points, showing leadership on the floor. On both ends before. I mean, I think LaVine's actually played pretty decent defense. You know, shows that he's working on it, at least in this preseason. LaVine and Portis are the most people I've been impressed with, most Bulls players I've been impressed with this preseason.
I thought LaVine had a fantastic game tonight against Charlotte. I thought he was pretty awful up until he got hurt in game two. In game one, he had a lot of nice minutes. But overall, yeah, I guess you have to go with those two guys. Big picture, I think the guys I'm most impressed with are Larry Markkanen and Denzel Valentine, which is how the team has completely collapsed without their presence. So I think that's a big picture of the two best. Who are the two you've been least impressed with?
The one comparison that I've had here with LaVine and Portis is they're both right at the same points per game average at 18.3. They're both clipping 2% as far as field goal percentage. Zach has got the edge as far as three-point percentage. He's right at that magic 40% number. Bobby, 18.2%. So I'm a little disappointed in terms of his three-point percentage. He's supposed to hit those shots, but otherwise he's got a lot of hustle that makes up for it.
Has the question for the whole team here, and I'll go. We'll start out with Keith for this one. Has the play of Portis within these first three games changed your mind at all on the Bulls making a greater effort to sign him? Or do you feel that, you know what, we better just keep that money basically open for a potential free agent next year?
I think you have to keep the space open just so you can take a shot. Obviously, Bobby's a restricted free agent, so you can match any offer that comes. And hopefully, with a stacked free agency class, teams are more preoccupied with the bigger names, and Bobby kind of falls through the cracks. And they hopefully get him on something lucrative, 10 to 12, anything over 12. I really don't think you can pay it to back up to your projected best player on your team.
Wise.
Yeah, like Keith said, I think that's probably the best idea. I know that Bobby is having a really good showing early on here in the preseason. But I think that they should just be patient and wait it out. I'd like to see what Bobby can do for the entirety of the season. Just because I feel like the Bulls, they don't need to rush into anything and end up in a bad space, you know, and end up, like, just tying up all of their money into Bobby Portis, which, obviously, like I said, he's playing really well right now, but I think that they should just stand pat because obviously he's going to be restricted. So, like Keith said, they can match any offer. So, yeah.
Marcus?
Yeah, I think there may be some Jabari Parker money left next year. The way he's going, I don't see us picking him up. There is room. Wise and I discussed this on the Bulls podcast. I mean, really, I'm looking at probably $8 million, $9 million a year probably for a bench guy. I mean, he's not a starter, so that kind of money. Unless, of course, he's going to get an offer sheet to be a starter somewhere else.
And Brad.
Yeah, I mean, you need to look at it logically here. Bobby seems to be like a realist, you know, coming in this year in the offseason stating that he's, you know, embracing the six-man role, which is, you know, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but I thought that was pretty awesome. Obviously, he knows Lowry Markkanen's going to be the starter and whatnot, but when it comes down to his contract, is he going to be the same way as a realist? What Keith said before, $10 to $12 million is where I'll draw my line. You have to take a shot at an elite free agent in the upcoming free agent class next year. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, I want to really judge it off of this year's play. He's a restricted free agent, match any offer that comes his way. So I'm not really too worried about contract negotiations as far as this, you know, as far as this is right now. I mean, wait it out.
I wondered, one quick question before we wrap up this segment. Do you feel that he has a legitimate shot at winning the sixth man of the year? Let's start with you, Brad, and go back down the table. Marcus next, then Wise and Keith. Brad?
Yeah, as far as him being a legit shot for sixth man of the year, I definitely think it's on how the team performs. If the team performs in a way where they can be a playoff contender and they can make some noise within the Eastern Conference, I mean, I definitely think it's something, you know, it's a possibility. Anybody coming off your bench like Bobby who can come out and maybe average 16 points and 8 rebounds a game off your bench and, you know, can be that driving force, that leader on your bench. I mean, obviously I think that he can do it, but it all depends on how the team performs, team record, all of that. Like, if we're a losing team and he's, you know, with a losing record, not a playoff team, and he's going to be coming off the bench averaging those numbers, no one's going to bat an eye towards him.
Wise.
I agree. It really depends on his play, man. I think he has a legitimate chance to win it, but it depends on the entire team's play. It depends on how they really play against some of the elite teams in the Eastern Conference. But I don't know. I think it's really going to be really based on how well he does with some of the other players off of this Bulls bench in terms of whether he can win the Sixth Man of the Year award. I really think that he has the talent to, especially if, you know, his preseason showing this any indication of how he's going to play once the season starts. I really think that he has a really good chance to do so. But if they're not, you know, if they're not making any noise, you know, at least being one of the middle teams in the Eastern Conference, then I don't know.
Keith?
I don't think that he will. You have players like Lou Williams and Eric Gordon who come off the bench 5 minutes into the game and play upwards of 30 minutes, and they still get consideration for the award, so I think he's at a disadvantage there, as well as the fact that, as Brad initially said, usually losing teams don't get awards handed to them. So if the Bulls are in the bottom 10 teams in the league, it's very unlikely that Portis gets the award.
Mark, sixth man in a year for Bobby Portis, do you think it's realistic that he can win that?
No, he's really got a legitimate shot at sixth man because he, so far in the first three preseason games, he hasn't turned it around that much. So I haven't seen him come back in and try and take over the game like he should be. And if he wants to get legitimate sixth man consideration this year, that's the kind of stuff that he's got to show on the court.
Let's talk about what two players have disappointed you or concerned you the most so far in these three early preseason games. Who are you most worried about going forward? And I know the easy answer is going to be Parker. I would hopefully provide you some solace with the fact that Parker's a lifetime 49% shooter. Although he has shot the ball horribly, I do have hope that he's going to turn that around, the offensive game. I mean, there are other reasons probably for concern for him. Why don't we start out with you, Keith, on this one, and we'll go back down the line. What two players are you most concerned about?
Justin Holiday, and as you pointed out, the obvious, Jabari Parker. But I had those concerns before these three preseason games, so that's nothing new for me. I wasn't projecting any all-star appearances for Jabari this year, so I'm not really surprised by his production. Obviously, it is a new system. It will take time for him to adjust. I just don't ever see him fully adjusting to the small forward. And Holiday, he just needs to hit something other than iron.
Marcus?
the elephant, played Jabari Parker. Who also concerns me is Cameron Payne. So far, he's got an average of 21 minutes a game, and he's got 2.7 points per game on 23% field goal shooting.
Brutal.
And I think Fred needs to actually get some other guys into the game, especially here in preseason, so we can establish it. But as a backup reserve point guard, he's terrible.
Wise.
As for me, it's Robin Lopez, and obviously, as everyone else stated, Jabari Parker. But I say Robin Lopez because he just looks, I don't know, early on in these, you know, these early preseason games, he looks a lot worse than he did last year. He's so slow. Like, he moves his feet horribly. And he's not even a rim protector. And I know I hear a lot of people stating that, you know, it's moving away from kind of the conventional big in the league. But at least on the defensive end, we still have those conventional bigs who can at least guard the paint. And, you know, it just looks wide open when Robin Lopez is in there, you know. So
yeah.
He's definitely a concern for me.
Brad.
So, I mean, like, obviously the obvious answer would be Jabari Parker, you know, Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday. The reason I don't want to pick Holiday or Lopez is because I don't expect them a part of my future anyway. You know, hopefully they're gone by the trade deadline, to be 100% honest with you. Like, and that's no hatred towards those players. Like, I, you know, don't come find me and kick my ass or anything like that. This is just what I feel. But I'm very concerned about Chandler Hutchinson. I understand he's a rookie. You know, he's a late pick, 22nd pick. But the 21% field goal percentage and the 16% three-point percentage right now is very concerning, as well as his hesitance on the court. I feel like he's scared. I hope that goes away with time, but I'm a little concerned about that because I do look at him as being, you know, a player that they can get away from a Justin Holiday with. You know, he can come and take those minutes. Another player I'm concerned with, again, is what everybody else said. I'll just jump on that bandwagon. You know, 23% from the field for Jabari Parker for two games. I don't know what the numbers are for – I haven't run them yet for tonight's game. And 20% from three-point land. Jabari's scaring me a little bit, but as you stated, Fred, 49% shooter. It'll come around. You know, he's getting in game shape. He's in a new system. He's in a new, you know, a new city. So, I would say Chandler Hutchinson and Jabari are concerning right now, but I'm not ready to freak out yet.
Believe it or not, I'm concerned about Wendell Carter Jr. He's the only guy in the interior who seems to be playing any bit of defense, and I'm worried that he's going to get frustrated, he's going to get angry, he's going to start losing confidence. I'm also frustrated with the way they've been using him offensively. They're not getting the ball. I think they should have a lot more of the offense at least run through him. He's a good facilitator. I'm a little concerned on that. And I'm mainly concerned about Fred because he looks like he's been kicked in the balls every time the game, you know, just gets out of hand so quickly. He clearly has kind of lost his team in two of these three games. And whatever he's saying isn't resonating because these guys aren't playing hard. That second game was one of the Milwaukee game was just an abomination as far as effort goes. And that's something you have to bring. And I think it's a reflection on the coach. I can't stand how he lets the officials just walk over some of his younger players. He's not aggressive at all in working the officials. It's another big fault. And I know this is kind of – I'd like to go up and down about Fred Hoiberg real quick and get your take on him. Will he be the coach of this team next year? Let's start out with you, Brad.
As far as Fred being the coach next year, I believe this is his fourth year, and then next year would be going into his fifth year. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is his fourth year.
Yep. Yeah. So you know, as far as Fred going into this year and then going into next year as head coach, I honestly think it depends on how he performs this year. But at the same time, I think that he does come out and finish his contract because in his first 3 years with the team, he really didn't have a roster that suited his hoy ball system that we all hear about. I write about this all the time. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that now it seems like he has a fast-paced offense that can get to the wings, that can shoot threes, and then he has, like you were saying, that you're concerned about Wendell Carter Jr., but he has that defender. He has at least two defenders in his lineup that a good coach could take advantage of that can really help you out. But as far as I'm concerned, I do think that Fred comes back next year. I think that he has a team. It's going to be a learning curve, you know. A lot of these players are young. A lot of these players are hungry. A lot of these players are out to prove themselves. But after his fifth year, will not be renewed, Fred, because Kirk Heinrich will be coming to coach Chicago Bulls and bring back to the glory.
Remind us to go back to Kirk as coach. Wise, what's your take?
Yeah, I think that Brad hit it on the head. I think that they are going to give him one more shot after this year. I think they're going to let him finish out his contract just because, as Brad said, you know, in the previous three seasons, he didn't have the team that was centered around his style of ball, you know, the game plan that he wanted to run. And I think this year he finally had that. So I think the Bulls front office want to just, you know, see what he can really do, because maybe they feel a little responsible for him not having a team that he should have had early on. So I think that they'll let him play it out. And also, I'm one who thinks that coaches have to develop just as well as players. You know, like how we don't consider, like, whatever, a 2 or 3 year player in the league a veteran. I think you have to look at the coaches the same way. And I'm not one who necessarily poo-poos a lot on Fred Hoiberg, but this year I will, if he doesn't at least, you know, come out and look respectable as a coach. If this team doesn't look respectable on the court and early on, it's not looking too good.
Amen. Marcus?
I actually think he will not be the coach next year. We've got two pieces to just let him waste away for another year with bad coaching. And it depends on who's available as a coach, but I have serious doubts that Fred will be back after this year. If they're par season again, I think he's done.
And Keith?
Kind of like Marcus, I think it's very dependent on the coaching market. If you have a coach like a David Fizdale that hits the market, or a bigger name that becomes available, then I think you make the move. Also depends where you finish in the lottery this year, if they finish in the lottery this year, what kind of talent you have. What does the next year look like? Is it going to be another developmental season, or is it actually going to be the year that they take the full step? 3 games in the preseason, doesn't look like they're going to take that step this year. They very well could. But if they don't, I think you have to look at the roster construction and decide whether or not they're even going to be ready for that step at that point.
So I think we got to keep in perspective, the Bulls are missing their best player. They have a rotation player out with Valentine. There's very few teams that, if you're missing two rotation players, are going to look great after the first 3 preseason games. But the fact remains, he's never had an offense that's been in the top half of the league. And I think we can all agree there's a ton of offensive talent on this team. And my opinion is, if we're not in the top half, he should be fired. I mean, this will be his 4th year with a bottom half offense, and he was supposed to be an offensive coach. I mean, the guy's a great guy. He seems like a very nice guy, and I hope he does it this year. But this has been embarrassing, 2 out of these 3 games. And this team has far too much talent to be performing this way. Along these lines, I want to hear from all of you, what's your prediction for total wins? And assuming that if they fall below that, do you feel that Fred Hoiberg should be fired? Let's start out with you, Keith, and go down the line.
I think we're going to finish 32-50. And if that's the record that we finish with, I think Fred probably should lose his job, but it all depends on the coaching market. You're not going to make a big long-term change if the right name isn't available.
Okay. Wise?
I would bet that we will win 35 games. I expect us to win 35 games. I think once Lauri Markkanen gets back, I know that there'll be a little bit of a learning curve, but I think once he gets back, I think that he's going to fit in like a glove, just at least on the offensive side of the ball. So I do expect the team to at least hit that 35 win mark, but if it doesn't, then yeah, I definitely think that Fred Hoiberg should be fired, because we have far too much talent to not at least win 35 games.
Marcus, what's the total for you that you expect Fred to get, and if not, should he be fired?
I think it's going to be about 38 wins this season. That'll put us right under 500, and if we have another dismal season, as I said previously, yeah, I think Fred should go.
And Brett?
So where I'm at with it is, I was going to say 38-44. That was my prediction. I think the math is right on that for 82. 38-44. The reason I actually, believe it or not, for even preseason really doesn't bother me all that much, because I've just seen terrible preseason basketball forever. But I have him 38-44 because of the Lauri Markkanen injury. I do think that this team is better than last year's team. They had 27 wins. I think we get 11 more. I think, you know, this team has enough offensive talent to win some games. And with the East being weak, but besides Philly, you know, I'm Philly, Toronto's going to be good with Kawhi Leonard, obviously. Boston's going to be good. You know, it's not a crazy hard division. I think with our prowess and our scoring prowess and how much potential we have. I think it's going to be 38 wins. If we fall below 38 wins, I have no problem saying goodbye to Fred Hoiberg. But back to our previous topic before that, nothing but nothing tells me differently besides John Paxson and Gar Forman that they are going to be sticking with Fred, because that's what they've said this whole time. And I think that they come out in a press conference, if we do fall behind and don't get the record that, you know, you guys are expecting or Bulls Nation is expecting, they're going to come out and say the simple, well, this is, you know, the first year with a roster that's fully healthy and it fully fits the system. That's what you guys are going to hear next year. I've seen this one before.
See, yeah, that's where I differ with you. I don't think Fred is Pax's guy. I think it's a Gar guy. And I think there was a difference in there. And I don't think there's a lot of positive vibes over the years from Paxson on the job that Fred Hoiberg has done, with the exception of this past media day. But he's been, I think, pretty clear. He was not happy with the job that he did before that. So if this goes south, I mean, I don't think it will, but if it goes really south and we end up with less wins than last year, I can guarantee he'll be gone. Well, the question is, if it's between 30 and 38, somewhere in that range, you know, is it going to be back for the last year? Is it going to be a good idea to bring a coach back? Will be, you know, in the last year of an agreement? That's another topic. You know, I don't know if that's a good idea either way. But this is supposed to be what he does, right? He's a college coach. This is a young team. He already proved he can't coach vets with the three alphas. So this is what's supposed to be right up his alley. I don't understand why our friend from Australia keeps on making excuses for this. This is what he's supposed to do. It's your job. You're the coach. Make it happen.
Yeah, when you say three alphas before, I mean, Rondo bought in with Fred. Rondo didn't really have too much of a problem with Fred if we're going to consider Rondo an alpha. It was just the two divas that were in our spring lineup along with Rondo. It was Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. And I think the driving force between Jimmy Butler's complete diva turn is a lot to do with Dwayne Wade. I mean, you know, he brought a little bit of Miami to Chicago. He brought a little bit of King James with him to Chicago. Like how, you know, I mean, you saw Jimmy kind of tore apart. The younger guys didn't like playing with Jimmy, you know. And I think that Fred had a rough time as a rookie head coach, you know, coming from Iowa State, coming from college. Yeah, he was in the league before, but I mean, you know, he was the mayor. He was Fred Hoiberg. He was just there. You know, like that was who Fred Hoiberg was in the league. He wasn't like this alpha guy. Dwayne Wade, who's a future Hall of Famer, comes in, thinks he knows everything, and we saw the disrespect that Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Bosh did to Spoelstra. You know, and Spoelstra's been a head coach for years in Miami. And then he comes and he does the same thing and gets a little running buddy in Jimmy Butler, and I really do think that killed a lot of Fred's spirit with that squad, you know. Yeah. And I'm not willing to say yet that Hoiberg's has lost the young guys. I mean, it's just the fact that LaVine's finally going to be healthy this year. Now he's starting off the year with our best player being injured, like you said before. It's just nothing is going the guy's way. That's just my opinion.
Is there anybody that wants to make the case for the three alphas on this panel? Anybody?
What do you mean, make a case?
Like, make a case. Like, I think that team should have been better than it was. I don't the team was...
I mean, we made the playoffs. We had a 2-0 lead in the playoffs before Rondo went down.
Yes.
I don't know how much more... I mean, I guess we could have had a higher seeding, but taking out the one seed would have been a great accomplishment. Unfortunately, Rondo was injured, and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy couldn't, you know, right the ship in the clutch. We didn't get playoff Dwayne Wade like we saw in Miami last year.
I don't buy the argument that team was devoid of talent. I think it's ridiculous to say that. You had the three alphas. Rondo, who, you know, allegedly is this great, valuable player who was very big for the Pelicans, who the Lakers obviously signed to bring there. Well, he was younger when he came to us, so he obviously still had a lot in the tank. I thought he played pretty well for us at points, especially when it mattered most. And obviously his injury might have cost us a playoff series there. But if you look at that team, it had, you know, Nico, who, whatever you feel, he's a talented player who obviously is who's done a good job for the Pelicans. And then it had Taj. It shouldn't have been a disaster like it was during the regular season. So, you know, I don't understand why everybody just says that was such a bad team. That team was sixth in defense in the league in defensive efficiency.
Now, if that three alphas team actually ran the system that Fred Hoiberg would have wanted to run, do you think that we would have been better than 500? And I don't mean Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler pulling threes like crazy. I mean, like, moving the ball, slashing, you know, and hitting open players.
No, because I don't.
They have been better.
To me, there's two types of coaches: the kind that, you know, make the talent adapt to the system, and the kind that make the system adapt to the talent. And you know, Fred Hoiberg, that team wasn't made for his system. They had very little 3-point shooting. The one guy that we were dependent on just absolutely sucked for his first 200 attempts in Nico Mirotić that year. You had to adapt your system, and I don't think he did a great job of that. I mean, I think Jimmy kind of adapted it to himself, you know. But you know, he really needed to be a little bit more forceful there and do some and step in there and kind of avoid some of the things that happened with that team. I guess, you know, maybe I'm being a little bit too hard on him, but I just thought the team had far more talent than, you know, was given credit for. Anybody disagree?
I agree with what you're saying with the talent. I hate to cut in again. It's just
everybody jump in. Don't mind. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the same. There was some good talent on that team. I mean, obviously you had Jimmy Butler, you know, who is, you know what Jimmy Butler is. You know what he is. You had Dwayne Wade, who's on the end of his career. We know this. You had Rajon Rondo.
Nico.
He wasn't that much of a factor. Nico didn't start the year up well. You still had McDermott. And McDermott can get there sometimes, but you had Taj. I mean, but this
Robin
really
Lopez
up and down, man. I mean, it wasn't that great. I mean, Robin Lopez is all right. I'm not going to sit here and say that Robin Lopez is like this. I don't understand why we call him this key veteran. He's never really done much. If he's a veteran around the league and he's got friends among the league, that's cool. But stats-wise, I can pull him up and talk about it. We know what Robin Lopez is. He's a center that'll get you 10 points and maybe 5 rebounds if you're lucky, especially at this point in his career. I mean, it's pretty pathetic right now that he's getting minutes in the preseason and Chris Dunn's leaving us at 6.5 rebounds per game, but that's just me. But this team shot like 33% from three-point land. It just didn't fit Hoiberg's system. And what I was getting to before is I don't care whatever happens to Fred. Whatever happens to Fred happens. I just want the Bulls to win. I don't care who my head coach is, to be completely honest with you. But he has a system in play, and the guys on that squad that we're talking about right now, two of them who were the main guys on that offense, two of them were against Hoiberg, and they wanted to play iso ball, and it doesn't work anymore. That doesn't work anymore. Iso ball does not work anymore. The one team that's winning championships is Golden State. That ball flies around the court. And the other team that's won one in Cleveland with LeBron is because LeBron is LeBron, and we know what he is, obviously. You know, like, that's why that team didn't work, is because people didn't want to listen to the head coach. Jimmy thought he knew better, and you know, that's why Jimmy's in the situation he's in now, and that's why Dwayne Wade almost played in China. Not because of that situation, it's because they failed to adapt. That's just my opinion.
I thought the same thing. I thought that the team failed to actually do better than it did because of the team chemistry. Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade just banding together and dividing the team. I thought that's what really halted them from actually moving further into the playoffs, not only the Rajon Rondo injury. Just because, you know, team chemistry is a real thing, and I don't think people, like, put enough emphasis on it, but by them killing the young players, by them killing their spirits, I felt like they just weren't engaged. A lot of the young players weren't engaged, and even with the example that you used about the Golden State Warriors, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry still have times in the game where they, you know, take over the game and they come down and they play a little bit of iso ball, you know, whether it's, you know, late into the fourth quarter when they need that or whatever the case may be. But that could have been the role that Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade took on instead of playing iso ball like 70% of the game. And I think that's probably what stopped this team from being as good as they could have been.
You know, it's interesting because when we had the three alphas, it wasn't even as good as when we had the two alphas back when Joakim won Defensive Player of the Year. We had Nate Robinson or DJ Augustine or, you know, those guys, and those were better teams. So it didn't always take those high-dollar free agents to get the job done. And I think that was one of the biggest mistakes of bringing Dwayne Wade in. I mean, he literally stole $40 million from us. You know, how many good guys could we have gotten for that same price that would still probably be on the Bulls?
I'm going to jump in with one last defense. Big picture, we went into the playoffs, and we were up 2-0 after dominating the number one seed in Boston. And I was there. I saw it. I mean, we all know those were dominating performances. And Dwayne Wade, it did work. Game two, he just put the knife in them in the fourth quarter. And everything was working great. And in game three, obviously, Rondo gets hurt. And Jimmy puts up the worst performance I've ever seen from an alleged superstar. I mean, that game is where you have to come out and play and put up a historic performance and go out 3-0 and basically finish that team off. And he was embarrassing in game three, and I'll never forget it. What gets lost in that is for most of that game, the other guys played really well in game three. He was the guy. He had the lowest plus minus on the court with, I think it was a minus 27. He was just terrible. And I lost a lot of faith in Jimmy Butler that day. But I digress. I do want to say I thought Hoiberg was awful that season. He played Paul Zipser far too much. He played Isaiah Cannon as his option instead of going with Valentine, which I think was a major mistake in the playoffs. I thought that was a joke. You know, we can go on.
I thought playing Grant was the mistake. If we would have switched to Zip a little sooner, we might have actually made that more of a series.
Oh, God, 100% agree. Zip City, bro.
Yeah, I try to block that out, that whole scenario at the end there. I mean, that was just awful. Let's go on to the last topic for the show, which is which Bulls player most deserves to have his number retired? I sent this poll out. It got over 300 votes, and the options were Derrick Rose, Kirk Heinrich, Norm Van Leer, or none of the above. Derrick Rose took 49% of the vote, none of the above, 26, Norm Van Leer, 16, and apparently 9% were drinking and voted Kirk for number retired. So why don't we go up and down the roster. Brad, we'll start with you on this one. Which Bulls player out of those, and of course the option none of the above, do you feel deserves to have his number retired and why?
Okay, so this is hard, man, because I'm a huge D. Rose fan. Norm Van Leer did some great things, but he was with the Bulls for 3 seasons, I believe, or 4 seasons. I know he was a 3-time All-Star with the Bulls, averaging 12.2 points per game, 6.9 assists per game. So that's awesome. You know, Norm Van Leer, and plus he was a commentator for us, RIP to Norm Van Leer. Kirk Heinrich now. Now this one, Fred, I know you're not a Kirk guy, and I don't know what your beef is with that Australian guy, that MK Hoops. He says some stuff and then he'll interact with me and then he won't interact with me. I don't know if I'm on his level or anything like that, but I know he does like Kirk. But Kirk,
you're way
Heinrich,
above his level, believe me. Right. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, like I said, I don't know much about the cat. All I know is that he's Australian and that sometimes he'll interact and sometimes he won't. I feel like when I shut him down he doesn't like to interact anymore, but
which is often
11.4 points per game, 5.1 assists per game. He's the all-time leader in three-pointers for the team. He was on the 06-07 defensive team. He was 03-04 all-rookie team. He's third in assists, eighth in points, and third in steals for the in franchise history. There's some really great players that played in this franchise that aren't up there. Derrick Rose, obviously, 3-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, MVP, brought Chicago Bulls basketball back to relevance, really. Gun to my head, dude, I'm taking Rose. Like, if I'm doing it, I'm taking Rose for what he did for the city. Following my heart, I'm going with Kirk because Kirk, like I said, man, he embodied what the city was about. He's a hard-nosed defender. He came in as a rookie in 03-04, did his thing in a really great draft class. That was one of the best draft classes. We're still talking about that draft class. Today we are still talking about that draft class that had LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, and probably one of the greatest players to ever play the game in Darko Milicic. I mean, come on, guys. So honestly, for what D. Rose did for the city, I would put the number one up in the rafters. Just because, the North Side gets a lot of pride. I'm a diehard Sox fan. I'm from the South Side of Chicago. I'm from Blue Island. So, South, right there on the cut. But being from there, for what D. Rose did for South Side kids, even you hear Jabari Parker praise his name still to this day, I would have to say D. Rose. But for a play, that's just from a heart standpoint for what he did. But from a player standpoint and stat standpoint, what he did for the franchise standpoint, Kirk Heinrich. Honestly, so I'm torn. But go ahead and roast me, Fred. Go ahead.
That was the best argument you can make. That was the best I've ever heard. It was a fine attempt. Let's go over to Wise.
All right, this one is an easy one for me. It has to be Derrick Rose. I'm sorry, I didn't get to watch Norm Van Leer play very much, but with Kirk Heinrich. I do love him as a Bull. I know that you definitely disagree, Fred, but I really enjoy watching Captain Kirk play, you know, on this Bulls team when he did in that, you know, in that 2000 decade with Lual Deng and those guys. I really enjoyed watching him play. But with Derrick Rose, I mean, how can you not put him in the Raptors? You know, he's the youngest MVP ever, even, like, ever, period, like, in the NBA, not just for the Chicago Bulls. And I thought, like, much what you said, just the things that he's done for the city. I know he doesn't get a lot of praise for the stuff that he's done for Chicago and Chicago, period, but Derrick Rose does a lot of stuff behind the scenes and even on the basketball court as well. Going back to that, I just thought that he was one of the most electrifying players I've ever seen, period. Probably the most electrifying point guard I've ever seen during his day, you know, from what, 09 to 2011, that MVP season. I thought that he was actually a lot better than a player that a lot of people was comparing him to back then in Russell Westbrook. I thought that Russell Westbrook couldn't see Derrick Rose on the floor back then, but, you know, obviously what happened to him, you know, injury-wise, but Derrick Rose has to get it, man. I feel like there are a number of players for other teams that have done a lot less than Derrick Rose but have gotten their jerseys retired. It just may be a little bit harder for D. Rose just because, I don't know, the front office, our front office seems to be a little bit stiff. But I think Derrick Rose definitely deserves it hands down.
Marcus?
My answer to this is none of the above. And it's a tough choice. I mean, obviously Heinrich busted his tail. Derrick Rose as well. Norm Van Leer, as we said before, he only played three seasons for the franchise. And I'm sorry, but I think you got to win a championship to be retired. That's just my feeling.
Even though they have two numbers already retired, without, you know, in Jerry Sloan and Bob Love, who did not win one, you feel going forward that's the, you got to have it.
I think that's the criteria these days. I mean, I know that you know, the guys who won the six championships, to me, they should all be retired. You know, if you're a participant on that, and especially that 72-win season, I think a lot of guys deserve that stuff. But as good as D. Rose is and was, I don't feel that it's warranted.
Keith.
But I'm going to run through this list as quick as possible. Derrick Rose, hands down. Only MVP in franchise history other than Michael Jordan. Only Rookie of the Year in franchise history other than Elton Brand and Michael Jordan, unless you want to consider the Zephyrs and the Packers. Only Chet Walker, Artis Gilmore, Scottie Pippen, and Michael Jordan have more All-Star appearances as a Chicago Bull. Derrick Rose led to the Bulls to a tie for the fourth best season in franchise history. He's from Chicago. And fans already won't let anybody wear his number anyway. So what's the point of not retiring it?
Yeah. Let me start out.
I think Benny the Bull wears it, right?
let me address Heinrich, because I'd like to get everybody's opinion on that, on this, because I do want to talk about Heinrich, Brad. We have to get into this. Kirk Heinrich's career in Chicago is two distinct periods, right? He played from 2003 and 2004 to a trade in the offseason in 2010. Then he was away from the team for two full seasons. Then he came back in 2012 and 13 and played to 2016 for us. How can we possibly retire a player's number? For during those two periods, from 2003 to 2016, that our best two seasons by far, were the only two seasons he wasn't in town. How can we possibly retire that guy's number? He never made an All-Star team.
Okay, well, it's easy to defend that, what you just said right now. Our two best seasons when he wasn't in town is when you watched an MVP form from the cracks in the ground into a rose. And yes, I just stole that from the commercial. You know, it's pretty much plain and simple. Like I said, you know, I do believe that Derrick Rose should get his, just going back in the previous conversation before I get into the Heinrich stuff, because I really do love you, Fred. I'm up here in the Northwoods in Wisconsin right now. I'm actually sitting outside because I can't get any reception up here, and I'm pretty sure a bear's going to eat me. I'm scared crapless right now. but I'm going to get into this.
He should.
I'm on family vacation, Fred. I'm scared out here, but, you know, we're going to make it happen.
If you make any more Heinrich arguments, I hope that bear comes. I'm really upset about this, but go on. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep on going.
All right. Hey, man, it's nothing but love with you, Fred, no doubt.
I love you too,
Fred. I'll tell you something right now, man. Getting into the D. Rose thing, I can't remember who said that that people shouldn't have their numbers retired. Maybe doesn't fit criteria unless they win a championship. I'll tell you something right now. I do believe that Allen Iverson should have his number retired, and he didn't win a championship. You know, I do believe that John Stockton and Karl Malone for Utah should have their numbers retired because they didn't win championships. I understand that this is kind of a newer NBA and all that. And going back to what
Memphis
said
Grizzlies
as well,
are about to retire Zach Randolph's number.
Exactly. And Z-Bo did a lot in the community as well as for the franchise too. I mean, you know, Z-Bo changed his ways a lot from his days from being in Portland and New York. You know, he grew up a lot in Memphis. But I do think that Derrick Rose should be, like I said, retired hands down, not just number-wise. I mean, he did a lot. And if you look at the first four seasons when the kid was healthy and doing his thing, he was a beast. You know, he was the best player we've seen in Chicago besides Michael Jordan. And he did a lot for the city, and he brought back the Bulls to ESPN and to Fox because, as we all know here on this roundtable, which is why we're having it, the media hates Chicago. The only media team that the only team that Chicago media loves is the Cubs. That's it. Hate the Bears, hate the Sox, hate the Bulls. Don't talk about the Blackhawks. That's a story for another day. We can have a round table again about that. But
that's
getting into
good.
The Kirk Heinrich stuff, dude, it's plain and simple. He embodied the city. The city loves that blue-collar stuff. It's like Taj Gibson will always be a legend here. Is he going to get his number retired? No, because he's a role player. I understand what you're saying, that Kirk was more of a role player. His number shouldn't be up there. I give you that wholeheartedly, but averaging 23 points in a playoff series and then helping lead a team past the defending champions in Miami, he garnished a lot of attention.
No, but he didn't,
especially like me.
Wait, let's stop there. He didn't lead them past Miami. He was awful in that series. Like this is the whole thing about Kirk. This is the whole thing that bothers me about Kirk. Kirk Heinrich. Are you talking about 2007 when they won that year? 2006 and 2007 that season. In that playoffs when they swept Miami in the first round, Kirk hardly even played. He was terrible. See, my view on Kirk Heinrich is
I might have got my season messed up there, but don't.
I think you're talking about the Wizards. The one year they
by the Bears.
Who was it they swept? I can't remember. They beat that he played really well. Or they didn't beat him. They lost to Washington, but he had a really nice series that year. No, Kirk Heinrich, this is the way I feel about John Paxson, his kind of untold story is Jay Williams. He had not just one, not just two, but three point guards disintegrate on him. He takes over from Krause's disaster. Jay Williams breaks his leg, like, within months and is done, and you lose that asset. Kirk Heinrich was a fine player. His best year was 2006 and 2007, and he had a 17 PER that year. In the playoffs, he was an abomination for that season, and he never, after that year, ever approached a 17 PER. 15 is average. Every year after that, for the rest of his career, was 13.9 or below. And in a lot of those years, they were single digits. He was terrible after that. So much so that in order just to get his contract off the books, we had to send a number one pick away in 2010.
Which ended up being Kevin Surfain. So yes, I understand.
Yeah, understood, yeah. But still a number one pick. You had to get him just to get him off the roster. You had to throw that away. Like I don't understand the infatuation with Kirk Heinrich. I don't think he was a tough player. He hardly ever got to the line after 2007 and 2008. And what I think it is, he's unique in that he was a white guy who played good perimeter defense. Like that's pretty rare. But
there
I think he sucked. I think he sucked.
Oh, come on, bro.
He was terrible after there's no doubt. He sucked after 2008. He was terrible. And
I will say one thing about Kirk. His decline after he was traded out of here to Washington, when he came back, he wasn't the same guy that we knew. His decline actually did start in 2009 when Derrick Rose came aboard.
It started in 2008. That's the thing. Decline was precipitous.
When Derrick Rose came aboard, right.
No.
When you ask when somebody in his number should be retired, and I give you what I gave you, compared to who else is up in those rafters right now.
I would argue Ben Gordon is more deserving. I would argue Luol Deng is more deserving. I think both of those guys
are insane.
Oh, I'm not insane. I can point to and you're
Luol Deng never. Yeah, well, we didn't give Kirk all that money. We gave Luol Deng a bunch of money to be like a 1B player, and he was like a C player.
He was still better than Kirk.
His numbers were great because he played 40 minutes a goddamn game, Fred. Like,
no,
that's why he was.
That's
good.
Not
it's because
true.
He touched the ball all the time.
Well, we can't get off on this without. I mean, we could. Let's do a whole show coming up on Kirk Heinrich, and we'll argue the for and against him. But
only
I think we all agree here. It sounds like
hurt my feelings tremendously.
Besides Marcus, I think we all agree. I'm also in the. I kind of view it 50. Like Norm Van Lier was great, but I think his post career helped him here. Like I don't think he was better than Chet Walker. Chet Walker made more All Stars. I think you even mentioned that, Keith, in your arguments. So he was good, but I don't think he deserved to get his number retired. I don't. And then I don't even think Cook's
Chet Walker
discussion.
And Artis Gilmore both had 4 All Star appearances for the Bulls.
Okay, so they both had the same number. I think Walker, if you look at the numbers, probably overall were better, you know, but then Norm was a better defender. But, you know, to me, it's just...
I think we can all agree that it's a damn shame Artis Gilmore's not up in those rafters. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, Hall of Famer, the A-Train.
Well, yeah, I mean, they traded, right? What's your point that they should retire his number? I don't know if they should retire his number. I don't think he had enough good years here. That has to come into effect.
No, he did. Like I just said, Chet Walker and Artis Gilmore, outside of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, are the only players that had more All-Star appearances than Derrick Rose. And they both had 4.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I said Artis Gilmore's number should be retired. I think it's a damn shame he's not. You know, he's still highly regarded here in Chicago.
All right. So to finalize it, to wrap this up, we're going to run through. You're not with Scottie, not with Michael. Give me your Mount Rushmore Bulls. All right, we'll start with you, Keith, and we'll go down. Keith, go ahead.
Ooh. So we got 4 names we got to rattle off here.
I probably should have given you guys this.
No Scotty, no Michael. Dennis,
you said Worm. No Scotty, no Mike.
No Scotty, no Mike.
Yeah, no Scotty, no Mike. I guess those two are givens. We're going to go with the Worm. Rose. I got to go Taj just because he's Taj. And hell, I might even just go Nate Robinson because that was just fun.
Oh, I love Taj. That's a good one, man. Marcus, what's your Mount Rushmore? I mean, this is more personal, right? Because mine's going to sound kind of ridiculous. But what, give me your Mount Rushmore of Bulls outside of Scotty and Michael.
Derrick Rose, Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, Tony Kukoc, and Taj Gibson.
Is that 5? Did you name 5? One more time.
Oh, okay.
Rose, go ahead.
Rose, Horace Grant, if I'm picking 5 here. I'm
only 4. There's only 4 on Mount Rushmore. You got to go with 4.
Okay.
Got it.
So Derrick Rose, Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, and Tony Kukoc.
Beautiful. Okay, Wise.
For me, Dennis Rodman, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, and Derrick Rose.
That's pretty good. And Brad, oh no.
It's easy, bro. It's easy. Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Kirk Heinrich. The last two, I feel, embodied the city. And even Joakim Noah, I know that he wasn't the greatest, you know, center around, man. But, God, I mean, we're all sitting here as Bulls fans right now. And did he make games fun to watch or what? That's my Mount Rushmore. Rose, Noah, Gibson, Kirk Heinrich.
I'm going to go with I thought long and hard here. But I'm going to go with Rose, Tony, Craig Hodges, and Pax. Rose.
Damn, Fred. Craig Hodges was a good one. That was really good.
Yeah, Craig Hodges was awesome, man. Just ahead of his time. Those are all good guys. I mean, what a great first episode of the Roundtable. And I really enjoyed. Thanks again, everybody, for jumping on. We got to do this again as we get into the season. And I think as we, you know, move forward, we'll figure out a way to maybe get us all in the same room. That'd be even better. Is there any way we can do? Wise, where are you at? Are you in the city?
I'm going to Chicago.
Awesome. And
yeah.
Brad, you're here, right?
Oh yeah, man. I'm a transplant. I live in the cornfields now in a small little town called Manhattan, Illinois. But I'm only 35 minutes away from the city.
Marcus, are you coming into town anytime soon?
No plans to, but you never know.
Yeah, maybe we can all get out there, the Laguna Beach, and visit. That'd be awesome to do a live Bulls podcast out there.